Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design, the Dr. C podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, or simply Dr. C. Tune in every 2 to 5 weeks, every Monday, as we explore the unique journeys of entrepreneurs. Our podcast sheds light on the paths entrepreneurs have taken in their respective industries. Each episode, we dive into the stories of entrepreneurs, their challenges, triumphs, and the insights gained along their journey. We believe in the power of innovation, resilience, and the entrepreneurial spirit that drives success. Together, we'll learn from a diverse array of entrepreneurs united by their passion for making a difference. Now is the time to unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship. Now is the time to be inspired, to learn, and to craft your own path to success. Join me, Dr. C, as we embark on this journey together.
I think we all should have a North Star or a personal constitution. Mine is 6 words, 3 sentences: know thyself, make things, and stay free. And I'm not out here promoting that everybody should have my list, but I think everyone should have their own 4 to 8 word constitution / North Star. So as opportunities show up, as you face self-doubt, as you get distracted, you have a few set of words to keep yourself honest, keep yourself accountable, and keep yourself on track to your destination.
Hi everyone. Today, you're meeting LaShawn Smith, a dynamic business creator and software developer, your guide through the intricate realms of entrepreneurship. With a rich background as a software executive at Amazon and Microsoft, LaShawn has decoded the patterns of success, using processes as powerful tools in the business arena. LaShawn's toolkit isn't just theoretical. It's a force that has birthed new businesses, fueled feature films, and has helped struggling enterprises. Now, he extends this toolkit to aspiring entrepreneurs, sharing the wisdom gained from his journey to help others sidestep pitfalls. Join LaShawn and I in this conversation, exploring the critical aspects of entrepreneurship, from creating leverage without external funding to stoic philosophy behind values-based business design. To continue these insightful conversations, hit subscribe. Whether you're an inspiring entrepreneur seeking practical blueprints or a seasoned business owner hungry for strategic insights, this is your invitation to dive deep into the world of entrepreneurship with LaShawn Smith. Subscribe now and join our vibrant community of forward thinkers. And thank you so much, LaShawn, for being here today. It is such a pleasure to have you. And I would love for you to just dive into your journey, how you got here today, and then we can go a little bit deeper.
Hey there, great to be here. It's going to be a great conversation. Good to spend time with you, Dr. C. My name is LaShawn Smith. I am an entrepreneur. I like to say I have tasted the buffet professionally. I've worked little company, big company. I've started multiple companies. And what I try to do is take what I've learned from all those various stops and, you know, kind of find the patterns and build systems. And if you ask me, you know, kind of what is the number one thing that I can maybe help others on their journey, is I'm very systems oriented. And, you know, there's all these cliches we hear about business, different things that folks kind of intuitively know are helpful, but they're like, that's just a cliche. What am I going to do with that information? And I believe the real unlock is you have to operationalize everything. And so what I've learned is, when I flew by the seat of my pants or I was being very reactive, I might be able to brute force my way to winning in the short term, but that sustained success has always come when I've actually put a system in place. And so just giving you a quick few beats on my background, I started as a software developer. I moved into what's called user experience design, UXD. And then after business school, I worked in what's called product management. And these are all different roles inside of a software company, but you can apply these, you know, almost any business. At some point, someone has to kind of sort out the technology or the process. Somebody has to figure out the business, and then somebody has to figure out the experience. And, you know, whether you're running a software company or a bakery, a lot of these elements are really the same. There's a framework from the consulting company PTC that has the BXT triangle. And I really like that because it kind of says, hey, almost every business is going to need some elements of that business experience and technology.
Absolutely. And you're right. Systems are everything. In order to grow or scale a business, you need those in place, because you can't be everywhere at all times. I know
right.
That's something I had to learn the hard way in the beginning of my journey.
Yeah.
But systems are so important. And I'm just really curious, because you spent over a decade as a software executive at Amazon and Microsoft as well. But what promoted that transition from the corporate world to entrepreneurship for you?
I think sometimes we treat it as a one-way door, as folks sometimes call it, you know, this decision that you make and you can never undo. I really look at it as a season of life thing. And, you know, just to give you some of those stops, I don't believe it's like, I used to work in this corporate job and then now I quit that and I'm an entrepreneur forever. I believe that we should look at our skill stack, look at the stage of life, and look what our goal is and try to figure out the best move. So for instance, I had worked in a big company for quite a long time. I left to start multiple companies. Two of them failed horribly. One was what's called an acqui-hire. This is when someone acquires the company, but really it's just to give all the employees jobs. And then a fourth time I sold the company through a M&A deal. And along the way, it wasn't some linear process where I used to work at a big company, then I did those. Some corporate jobs were woven in there. And I say that to say, you know, there is no kind of one way on the journey or the path here. And what's quite fascinating, you know, I had a small, a low seven-figure exit when I sold my company, but I actually made more money in corporate America because I got the timing right and worked at a place where, you know, they gave us stock options and those, you know, those stock options rose quite well. And so I like to hang out with folks and remind all of us, including myself, it's not so much that there is one best way, but hopefully you can talk to people, listen to people's stories and figure out, oh, those are the elements that not only may resonate and work for where I am at my journey, but also where are we at, you know, from a macroeconomic standpoint, because, you know, advice that worked 10 years ago may be good advice during that window, but it actually may not apply quite the same as things start to shift. And so through the years, what I found is I want to look at what is the best opportunity for me at the time. And the reason I love entrepreneurship, especially in times like today, where it's scary, there's a lot of uncertainty, is that you are in control. And there's no one to blame. There's no one to point the finger to. Now, yeah, that makes us kind of get up in the morning and really have to have the right energy process, support structure, but we are in control of our destiny. And I love that.
I love that too. And that's the beautiful thing, right? We have control over the decisions we make. And you brought up a really good point because a lot of times people think, well, this is set in stone and I can never change that path. And I think once you start the entrepreneurial world, I know so many people that have gone back to get part-time jobs or going back full-time just to pay for the things that they need to do in order to scale their business or grow it from a standpoint of just completely leaving the corporate world or a full-time job, whatever it may be. But I love that you said that. So if somebody is wanting to start a business, what kind of business should they start? If they're just starting out, what would you say if somebody's just new on that journey and they're like, I want to maybe dabble in this, but I'm not sure if I want to completely jump in just yet.
I love, you know, that you call out the fact that you can use your current job to effectively subsidize or be your first investor, right? And the part where I've seen folks get in trouble time and time again, and I've done this as well, we as humans have a tendency to say, you know what, I've identified a problem and I'm great at a certain skill set, or I can solve a problem, and they get right into delivering the service or building the product. And again, it doesn't matter if you make furniture or you're building some whiz bang new AI tool, or, you know, you work on rockets, like it doesn't matter what the kind of the business is, we have a tendency to actually want to get to making the thing. And what I find is you actually want to invert that process. You want to go figure out who is your customer, how are you going to sell to them, and then start making it. And the reason this is important is threefold. Number one, you need to talk to a lot of folks to make sure you can validate what problem you're going to solve. And I use a definition of the word market. Some people use, you know, what's the market? Who's your market? It's a, you know, maybe a more sophisticated version of who's your customer. But I have a very specific articulation. A market is a group of individuals who have a shared problem that is urgent, reoccurring, and painful. And the goal is to figure out, you know, is there a great market? And a great market means those people also have the means and the motivation to actually pay you to solve that problem. And I have this framework or toolkit that I've coached folks on, that when you have your next great idea or your next focus, go figure out who your market is. And here's how you're going to validate it. You're going to go interview 100 people, a literal 100 or more people. And this is super, super powerful because it's going to force you to get beyond your friends and family and your past coworkers, right around 17, 23, you're gonna be like, who do I talk to next? And you're gonna find like, oh goodness, I have to go figure out where my customer's at. How do I convince them to talk to me for 15 to 30 minutes for free? These things will force your brain to say like, oh, these are all things related to how I'm going to sell in the future. And as you go through this process, you're also going to figure out, oh, there's probably a better way to use this word instead of this word, right? Because you're going to find what's resonating. And then once you get to, you know, conversation 53, 62, you're going to realize that whatever problem, if you're being honest with yourself, you thought you were going to solve at interview number three, it's actually a different problem. Now, once you get through this whole process, again, if you're being honest with yourself, what you'll have is a rich list of humans who have given you true feedback. And these people become your future case studies. They become your first set of customers. They become your social proof. So people say, you know, what have you done in the past? I like to use this framework called the $1 sale. It doesn't matter if you're selling an $800 product or service. For your first 2 to 5 customers, you go sell it for $1, not for free. For $1, you make them give you $1, but you turn those into your first testimonials, your first case studies, your first video feedback pieces. And along that journey, again, what all of this does is forces you to figure out, what does the customer want? Not what am I trying to project? And so that's the background and the backstory. Your question is like, what business should people start? The reason I wanted to walk through that framework is because if you just dive in with a business, again, it doesn't matter, pressure washing, home services, it doesn't matter what the business is. If you don't go validate it first, you're taking a huge risk. The other lovely part about this way to kind of start your business is you are going to be able to do this with very little money. It'll take a little more time to get all 100 of these interviews done, but guess what? You don't need an investor to go do these interviews. So you can use your time at your job to go figure out, have I picked the right market? And so I love this framework because it removes a lot of the perceived blockers that we have on why we can't get started, or, you know, this business could work if I had more capital, if I could just get an investor. No, you need to go figure out who's your market and how you're going to sell to them. And then from there, you can, you know, either use your own money through bootstrapped or raise money, but you're doing it from a very validated place. So that's the framework. Now let's get to your core question. You know, what are some of the businesses? I believe that if you're just getting started, you don't have a lot of exercise with the entrepreneurial muscle. One of the main things I want folks to, you know, figure out is how can you take your existing skill stack? These are all the things that make you great. These are your skill set, your experience, your personal values, and combine those and let the world know, I'm easy to find. This is what I stand for. And this is what problem I'm solving. What problem are you solving? You're going to go figure that out from those 100, you know, conversations, and likely do something that is service-based or is very easy to deliver and support. And the reason I say that is because businesses invariably become a sales delivery support engine. And, you know, some are more labor intensive than others, but I'll go back to our bakery example. You know, I've spoken to two folks who run bakeries, and both of them said, you know, I started a bakery because I love to bake, but I spend all my time in QuickBooks and interviewing people to work in my business. I don't do anything related to baking really, because I'm trying to keep the business alive. And so if you're an entrepreneur out there thinking, what type of business should I start? I really like service businesses as an initial step into the world. That might not be your last business. You might, you know, end up productizing that, or that might be a segue to something else. But it's going to help you learn all three of those pillars of sales, delivery, and support. And then from there, you can go figure out, all right, where can I remove myself? Where can I add more process? Where do I need to hire? If you say, I'm going to build this really, you know, complicated product, now you have to spend all this time building the product, this time, you know, selling the thing. And then, you know, people will call you or email you and say it's not right, and then support. And you're just going to run out of time if you're one person, 3 people, 5 people, if you're a very small team and building a very complicated product and trying to learn all of the operational pieces of being an entrepreneur.
Ooh, I love it. There's so much to unpack there, but I love the framework because I do think a lot of people start a business. They're like, yes, this is exciting. I want to give this or this service, this product. but then there's no market research behind it. I love the $1 aspect of just at least paying $1 because there's an energy exchange of money. So you know they're working for it, they're getting something from it, but you're also receiving the work you're doing as well. But I think it's so pivotal because I made that mistake in marketing where I didn't do marketing. I was like, this seems great. Why isn't everyone coming to it?
Right.
But, you know, I had to learn the hard way. And I think that's the beautiful thing of when we're able to at least get 100 interviews or more, and you're being honest with yourself. I love you added that piece in there too. Because when you add that in, you're really seeing what is the problem? What are you solving? And then you can actually see the success versus just it being, okay, well, this is what I want to offer versus what are your customers wanting? What is the something that you're good at that you can deliver and have that support behind it? So I love the framework. I think that's so spot on. I think it's something that everybody needs to implement if they haven't already, because you could be running in circles and not making any movement towards that success that you want to obtain.
Totally. You said something that it just sparked, I think, an important part here as well, though, just to remind all of ourselves to lean into what we're already great at. And so there's probably some combination of what you already know or what you've already been able to do that can be part of your, some people call it your unfair advantage. And, you know, so many times we don't want to lean into the part of our story that maybe isn't as interesting or isn't as, just exciting to share. And sometimes that's the magic. Or maybe we have, you know, academic background or some other piece that's very valuable. I mean, you know, for someone like yourself with a background in psychology, that's super important to, you know, entrepreneurship. I worked, at a big company on games and applications, and I managed a team focused on behavioral economics. And that's, you know, in short, the way people make decisions with time and money. And so most economics assume all the actors, as they say, are rational. But we know the actors in most economic systems are humans, and humans are not rational. And behavioral economics is the study of how we make decisions with time and money. It's about, you know, all the biases that come into place, all the shortcuts we take in decision making, the anxiety that can surface if we have too many choices. All of these things are part of how you're going to message your product, how you're going to present it, how you're going to position it. And to me, it's not surprising where, you know, if you look at someone like Mark Zuckerberg, who, you know, people say like, oh, he was coding in college. And like, sure. But what was his major when he was in college? It was psychology. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, these are really important things for us to remind ourselves. Sometimes just our understanding of our customers in a deeper way can be the unlock. And I believe all of us have some version or skill set that if we really leaned into, it's going to give us an unfair advantage in whatever market that we decide to enter.
Absolutely. Human behavior is so important because you're at the end of the day, every business is relationship based, even if it's a product, because there's a connection to it. There's an emotion that is evoked based off of what that product or service gives you at the end result as well. But also the passion you have for creating it, the product, whatever it may be. And I'm really curious because of just all the lessons that you have learned, especially from value-based business design, from all the aspects of just really helping first in product as well as service. Hi friends, today's video is so special because it's brought to you by our incredible sponsor, Love Sorrow, where your stories meet craftsmanship in the most beautiful way for both men and women. I've recently discovered their custom fine jewelry design. Trust me, it's a game changer. Check out these amazing pieces being delicately crafted. Each one tells a unique tale, and the best part, you can be a part of the design process. With over 50 chain styles crafted from solid metals, you get that timeless piece that is permanent and seamless without a clash. Your piece, your style, your story. Love Sorrow, our sponsor, is offering you a chance to enter a world of understated enchantment. Head over to Love Sorrow's store locations in Los Angeles, California, and Boulder and Cherry Creek, Colorado, to begin your journey. Let's do this together with Love Sorrow. Now back to the show. But what are some of the key takeaways from your best-selling book and how these principles apply to high-growth products in the global market?
So the basis of this book, so folks don't need to go out and buy my book. I'm going to give you all of it in the next, 45 seconds. The punchline is very simple. In our current world, large companies are trying to serve all customers. And for better or worse, we have a very polarized, set of values, not just in the US, but in many Western countries. And by that, I mean, you know, whether it's politics or it's some other set of values, there are all these things where if you're a mega brand, it's really challenging. We saw this happen with Bud Light, where they tried to keep their base customer and then they expanded and there was a lot of backlash. Now, I don't really care which side of the argument you're on for Bud Light. Disney's going through something similar right now with their recent financial announcements, where they said, hey, we've alienated some of our customers and it's impacted us financially. Regardless of where you sit on whether it's social issues or other types of values, if you become a massive company in a world that's very polarized, you're likely going to alienate one or more of your customer segments. And I don't know how to solve that for a big company, but that's not my problem. That's not our problem. Our problem is for the entrepreneur to say, let's use that to our advantage. And so values-based design says, all right, go figure out, not value-based, values-based, what values is your company going to stand for? And I'm not talking about making cute posters you put on your office wall or cute little quotes that you put on your Instagram page for your business and say, like, you know, this is what we stand for. No, write a list of values that you're willing to go out of business to defend. And that's really the punchline, because if you're not willing to go out of business to protect, you know, your stated values, they're not really your values. But if you can identify those and you can make that commitment, you're effectively creating an extreme amount of trust. And so in today's world, there's so many ways to take a common business and just add your values to it, and you're going to attract another set of customers. There's a entrepreneur, Patrick Campbell, sold a company called ProfitWell for a couple hundred million dollars. And he did a research study that was very powerful. And he showed that if you took a commodity business and then you laid values on top of it, you would lift revenues 20 to 40%. So if you said, I'm selling coffee, but this coffee is only for dog lovers, this coffee is for someone with conservative or liberal beliefs, you're going to alienate the other group. And for a lot of us, I don't want to alienate anyone. I don't want to cut anybody out. My point is, you don't have to do this, but this is a lever that the small business entrepreneur has in their pocket, because they don't have to serve everyone. And many customers are yearning to, you know, say, I already buy coffee, I already buy this pet food, I want to buy it from someone that shares my values. And so it's a huge unlock and a competitive advantage if you can find the courage to actually commit.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just thinking about the value aspect, because I know I've spoken to a lot of business owners, all different backgrounds, and we do talk about values and what we stand for. And it is scary, because you don't want to, there's like the cancel culture and the alienation, all those factors, but really looking at it, I mean, human decency, the basic ones, of course, but also what you stand for, and realizing not everyone's your people. Not every single person is going to need your product or your service, but it's really how you present yourself to the world and being aligned with that. Just like we were talking about earlier with the market research and being honest with yourself. But I think that's where the core of any business, when you have those core values and you stand by them 110%, you're the right people are going to find you, and you're going to be able to service the people that you're connected with. And of course, it's not going to be everyone, and that's okay. That's part of life. Right. We're not going to love everybody. We got to be nice to everybody or kind to people. But I think I just really agree with your stance on that, because I do think our values drive the mission, the vision, everything that we have for our business, but also attracting what is going to be necessary for us to help others in the way that we want to help them in that regard. And I think it's so powerful. I wanted to take a moment for that, because I do think everything goes back to values and how we live our lives too.
Right.
So powerful. And kind of jumping a little bit to just more of the lessons that you've learned on this journey, because I know there's been highs and lows, but what are some of the obstacles that you've had to really overcome in building your business?
Well, I think the biggest one is you got to keep showing up. The business I run today is an investment company. So I acquire and incubate small businesses. So it's not complicated. It's not super sophisticated. I do play to my strengths on software. So many times there's a software angle, but almost anybody who is comfortable with a laptop and can build the muscle of kind of good interpersonal skills of interacting with humans could do what I do. And the wild part is, like, as far as how much I make, it's fascinating how little work is tied to outside outcomes. And, you know, when I was working as an employee, I would think I need to go do all this work to get compensated properly. And when you're doing deals or other types of exchanges, it's about having the right information. It's about, you know, building the right network. It's about having the conviction to make high confidence decisions, but it's not about how many hours you work. And, you know, it's not like, you know, I don't preach a 4-hour work week or anything like that. I work quite a lot, but it's because I'm energized by it. But if I pulled back my hours, I wouldn't necessarily do fewer deals or do lower quality deals. And so I think that's an important reminder to folks that, you know, as an entrepreneur, your level of effort from a time and calendar standpoint isn't necessarily going to be what drives the most success. But I have not found anyone who truly has a passive income stream that just gives them money unless they have, you know, really done well and, you know, amassed a real fortune, you know, just buying stocks or real estate that's like truly passive. So when I hear the word entrepreneurship and passive, I don't know how those two go together. This is an active business. Buckle up, roll up your sleeves. We're about to go. But some of the things quickly that I've learned is you got to have a process. And I'm not just saying this like, oh, you got to have a process. Let me give a quick tactical tactic. I use something called calendar journaling. And what it means is 2 to 3 times a day, I go to my calendar and I go and change anything that I scheduled on my calendar that I actually did something different with. So let's say I say 1 p.m., I'm going to write this investment memo to evaluate some new deal, right? What I might actually do at 1 p.m. is go watch YouTube and I learn because there's some new educational video that's teaching me something. And, you know, there's nothing wrong necessarily with that, but I want to be honest with myself. And I say, is this the place to spend my minutes? And as an entrepreneur, as a professional, as humans, I believe the same way we look at our bank account and the amount of money that's in there is the same way we should be looking at our time. And the minutes on our calendar is not about hustle culture and trying to squeeze out the last minute, but it's about being as intentional as possible on how we spend all our minutes. And so if you want to binge on Netflix, go for it. But if you say my destination, my dream, my aspiration is something that conflicts with that, then you got to try to find tools to hold yourself accountable. So really finding these tactical things to force yourself to stay in shape is important. Number two, what I've learned is you have to be consistent. I have shiny object syndrome like you would not believe. I'm like, oh my goodness, a new idea. Oh, a new business. Oh, I met this cool person at a networking party. We should partner. Like, like hot mess, right? And so I have to keep myself in control and in check. And what I do, I've created this little personal system, again, to babysit myself, is if I have an idea, I will usually spend 1 day a week, maybe half of that day, and just kind of exploring the idea, just to get it out of my mind. I'm researching, I'm writing things down, and make sure I write things down. That's very therapeutic, and it helps me feel like I have the right level of kind of like it's out of my brain. And it's kind of like the pickle jar. Folks have used that for personal budgeting. You go write it down, and then you're not allowed to go buy that thing for 30 days. And many times when you go back to your list, you're like, I actually didn't really want that. So I do that and I give myself a half a day to a day. And then I just sit on it for a month or so. And if I can't get it out of my mind, then I will give myself a full week. Now, I have the luxury as an entrepreneur that like there's no meetings or other things that I'm missing to give myself the whole week. So other folks might have to spread that over the course of a month because they're maybe spending evenings or something like that to pull that off. But then once I spend that week, I ask myself, is this going to be something that I'm going to really have some conviction on? And then I have two more time windows, 90 days, and then a 1-year commitment. And I tell myself, LaShawn, you're going to commit to this for the next 90 days. you're going to commit this for the next year. And then I give myself permission to break up with it in at the 1 year mark. And if it is durable and this is like, I'm ready to go, then, you know, I think that's where you can make that multi-year commitment, because to really go hard as an entrepreneur, it's going to many times be a 7 to 10 year journey to find success. But we sometimes are challenged because that commitment is hard. You're like, am I picking the right idea? Am I focused in the right place? You know, did I get it right when I started? And all this self-doubt and other things can come inside. And I think, you know, giving yourself permission to break up with the idea is important, but you have to find your version of a system to stick to it. Because if you're not consistent, guaranteed it's not going to work. So it'll just be a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so anyway, that's that piece. And then lastly, what I would say is, I used to try to go it alone. I'm smart. I figure this out. And you need a support structure. So even if you don't have a co-founder, I believe you need a personal board of directors. And think of it the same way a company has a board of directors. You should have your support structure. You need folks who can open doors. You need folks you can brainstorm with. You need cheerleaders who can, you know, support you even if they don't know exactly what you're doing. You need folks to challenge you and say, that's a dumb idea, and it's coming from the right energy and place. And so all of these things, you know, if you say, I'm going to go do all this and I'm just going to show up to my friends and family and tell them when it's going right, you're probably not going to figure it out. You need to have people to hang out with when it's going wrong. And for me, it took me a little while to really embrace and then operationalize. And hopefully that's a theme throughout this conversation. You don't need complicated frameworks or big, you know, fancy words or new concepts. What you really need are simple things that you can operationalize, and you need to be able to put it on your calendar and really reshape how you show up every day. I heard this great definition for learning that you don't learn something until you change your behavior. And so if you say my destination is, I want to be an entrepreneur that, you know, next week I want to make $2, then after that, $200, then $2,000, $20,000, $200,000, $2 million, right? I love it when people work from the small number and just add a zero instead of saying like, all right, tell me how I make $1 million this year. No, that's not the framework. Let's go make your first $2. Then let's go turn that to $20, real $20. And then just keep adding a zero. And that'll force you in context to go figure out what new skill do I need to exercise? What work do I need to add to my list? But it won't be like this real lottery abstract thing. And through that process, you're going to realize I need a team. I need a support structure. And so you got to get all of the negative Nancy's out of the DMs and like the I can't talk to you anymore. You're not here to help me. And you got to find the folks who can help you along that journey. So those are some of the things that I've come back to time and time again to make sure I keep myself honest and keep myself on track.
Ooh, everything you said, I'm like so in agreement with. And I think it's just, it goes back to keeping it simple, staying consistent and having that support. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the systems being put in place to optimize your business, because you're right. Being an entrepreneur, people go into it thinking, oh, I'll like just be able to travel all the time and do whatever I want or not have to work a few hours a day. And it's the complete opposite, because it's more than a full-time job. It's 24/7, especially getting off the ground. I love that you said 7 to 10 years, because I think a lot of times small businesses, especially, it's that like 5 year mark where you start to see that growth and you're like, okay, there's some consistency. I can see them take time off, like those kinds of things. And I think it's just having that real honest conversation where it's not glamorous and but it's fun. And if you love what you're doing, that will shine through and it doesn't feel like work. I'm sure you can attest to that as well. Like there's times I just love what I do. There's like maybe 20% of the stuff I don't like to do, but that's where you outsource in that.
There you go.
By being able to learn for yourself and understand how things work. So when you do pass it off to delegate it, at least you know what's going on too. But the biggest thing is keeping it simple. And I love the idea of when people say, I want to have $1 million business, that's great. You can. However, it's starting with, okay, $2, $20, $200, and continuing to add the zero. I love that concept because I think it goes back to you have to start small. You can have big dreams, but you kind of, I always say you work backwards. Okay, that's your big dream. What's the first step you have to take? Because you can't go from 1 to 100. I mean, I haven't really met a lot of people that have. Maybe there's like 1 in a million that have done that, but right. You don't know the background story, just like what you were talking about with Mark Zuckerberg when he went to school for psychology. That's what his background was. But understanding the human behavior to even with coding, with creating Facebook, all of those factors, you really don't know what's happening behind the scenes of things. You might just see the front end of everything. But I'm really curious, because with optimizing your business, I know systems is such a huge part of what you do with softwares and everything that you've done to help businesses, but also your own too. But with that process, what does that look like? How do you help make or break a business with optimizing it?
Yeah. So process optimization, you know, it's one of these like consulting terms, and I don't have the more simple set of words quite yet, but really, you know, I like to tell folks, you know, step one, before you figure out what tools, go write down. It can just be a one page Google Doc. Like, you know, it could be a sticky note, like it doesn't matter, but you're trying to find the most simplistic way to document your, again, sales, delivery, and support processes. And ideally, you can get those connected and as close to a single process as possible. What I find many folks do is they worked in another type of company, and they're trying to replicate all the departments that they saw. And, you know, they know their department, but then they work with other departments, and they're trying to replicate that in their small business. I'm like, no, you're trying to have as simple as a streamlined process as possible. And you want sales to connect with delivery, with support. And when I say delivery, again, that's actually delivering the service or building the product. People might call it R&D or what have you. But basically, you got to sell it, you got to make it, you got to support it. And so if you don't write that down, you can't do the next step, which is to go figure out at each step in that process, what is the metric you're going to measure to know if it's going right? You got to be able to measure this. And then you want to set a target. What do I think that number, you know, that metric should be for this week or this month or this quarter? And then once you have that, again, that this is still just like a one pager, then you go look at that and you say, all right, what are the tools out there that can help me improve this metric? You're not thinking abstract anymore. You're like very action oriented. You're like, the next 35 minutes, I'm going to go figure out, of all the tools I've seen or that I'm going to go research, what can help me solve this problem? So you're not saying like, here's this new cool fancy thing, where should I put it in my business? No, you know your shopping list of what problems and gaps you need to go sort out. So that's the starting point I think everybody should show with. As far as the actual tools, this may be a little opposite to a lot of folks, but I don't believe you need a bunch of super expensive tools. Now, I use all sorts of, like, I experiment with a ton of like software as a service tools and different types of tools, you know, from social media scheduling tools, market intelligence tools, email drip tools. Like I've fooled around with so many of these things. And what I keep coming back to is, number one, you should figure out how to embrace a culture of writing. Figure out what, you know, whether it's a Word document in Microsoft 365 or Google Doc or just, you know, notes on your iPhone. Find a way to get really good at taking the ideas in your brain and writing them down. And this might seem like the opposite of a tool, but it's like a carpenter can do a crazy amount of things with a saw and a hammer. And sometimes we're looking for like the magical fancy tool. It's not money that's blocking you. It's mastery of the tool that is, I think, the real unlock. And so writing, when I say writing, like let's have an example. Let's say you're a one person, two person company. You don't have a ton of, you know, people in meetings. You still need to write things down. Maybe there's a vendor that you're going to hire. Maybe there is going to be, you know, someone that you're going to need to partner with. If you always have to have a meeting to talk to them, to get them onboarded, to get them to understand where you're at, it's going to be very inefficient. And so I really believe like this is something people should lean into. But we talked about the market earlier. There's an artifact that I love for people to write called a manifesto, where you're going to basically write, why does this business exist? And it is, you know, 90-95% on the why, you know, talking about the problem and how it can transform things. And it's only like 5% of your product, but you write it in a customer facing tone, and you can use it as a lead magnet to publish, to attract new customers. You can use it as the basis to write ad copy, to build your website. So many things you can do. And this is just using regular writing tools. So anyway, I'm a big proponent of just use what you have, but really get good at writing. And especially if you have any folks that you work with in other parts of the country or the world, time zones are a lot easier to manage when people can read it on their own time. But anyway, so the hack though, you asked for specific tools. So I don't want to just give folks to say like, go use Google Docs. I'll give you two things. One, we use a lot. When I say a lot, we use a lot of Loom. So Loom is a program people probably have seen, where you can do screencasts and kind of show your screen and record your face. But the way we use it is for async meetings. And so we have a rule: don't schedule a meeting if it's something that you can walk through in 5 to 10 minutes. Don't record a Loom if it's something you can write down, right? So step one, go write it down, share, let people read. If that's not appropriate form of communication, go record a Loom. If that's not appropriate, then go have a meeting. And in every meeting, you better have a Loom or a doc that everybody can read or watch in the first 5 to 20 minutes of the meeting. And then we get into the discussion. But what's beautiful is that we just pass these Loom links around, and then you can watch it whenever you want. And then you can go on the Slack and you can provide some discussion and feedback. But now you're not forcing everybody to come in at the same time. That's something that, again, is a low-end tool. The other tool we use, this is not going to be for most folks, but we use a project management tool called Linear. And, I'm not so much promoting Linear, but it's a very lightweight programming or project management tool. It's very popular in the software world for folks who are building, apps and things like that. But the takeaway for folks, more broadly is it just lets you move fast. It doesn't say like you have to, now I got to move my mouse over here and I got to move this thing over here. It's all about like, you can just use all these keyboard shortcuts, like you can move quickly. And so I love tools that people may already be using, but they can let you move so much faster. It's one of the reasons like we tried Notion. There's so many great Notion templates and like, this is so clunky. And if folks are using Notion, they're like, there's nothing wrong with Notion. I'm telling you, there are other options out there that like, they can make you move so fast. And so I'm not here to say use tool A or tool B, but just know that there are some alternatives to maybe some of the tools people already use that are very great. Last thing I will say on the tools is a lot of times when you look at these subscription prices, it's like, oh, it's $30 a month for this and $20 a month for that. And it starts to kind of pile up. Really think about how much you would pay somebody to solve that problem for you on an hourly basis. And through that lens, a lot of these tools get really affordable. And so Microsoft has a product called Copilot, which allows you to take, basically it's like a little ChatGPT on the side of all of your documents. And there are more sophisticated types of these products, but people who are like, well, I use Google Docs or some other thing that's not Microsoft. Here's a little hack. If you have one account with Microsoft 365, that's the name of their kind of productivity suite, you can add Copilot. So if you have a $10 a month email address with them, you can add Copilot for like $35. So now for $45, you can do this. So what does this cost you? You need a domain that you can connect to them. You need at least one account, and then you need this $35 add-on. So now you're like $10 a year for this domain, and then around $45, $50 a month for this account. But what you can do is, whether you have Dropbox or Google Drive or whatever, you can just drag those docs into Microsoft's solution. It's called OneDrive. And now when you open up that spreadsheet or that doc or that presentation, you can start asking all of these questions. And now that's like your assistant. So you've hired an assistant for $45. And I'm like, this is crazy. You can say, tell me the trends in this spreadsheet. Help me understand this. Maybe someone's not an Excel guru. You can say, help me write the right formula that solves for this problem. And so, that may seem like an old stodgy, like, oh, we don't use that tool. This is huge value for $45 a month. And it's like hiring an assistant. And so anyway, there's all sorts of tools. I love the simple ones, but hopefully those will spark some ideas.
Oh, it sparks some ideas for me. I love that, especially if you're growing and scaling a business, having that simple process. And I love that you keep everything simple, but having it written down in a Google Doc or wherever people can read it. If that doesn't work, then Loom. If that doesn't work, then having a meeting, because it saves so much time. I mean, I used to sit in these corporate meetings, like when I was in corporate, and I just like be sitting there. I was like, this could have been me.
Why are we all here?
Exactly. It makes things so much easier to manage. And especially if there is like people from different time zones and countries, to be able to bring everyone together through a document or a video, it just makes everything so much simpler.
Yeah. Well, and one side hack there too. We have different, kind of cognitive and, you know, different ways we work, right? Different ways we process information, different ways we want to communicate. And if you start async and then work your way asynchronous, and then you work your way up to a synchronous style of communication, what it also allows is the person who needs a little more time to get their thoughts through, they can still participate. It's not like I'm talking, and if you don't pop in on the meeting right now with the perfect line, then you're not valuable to the team. Or maybe, you know, you have, you know, English as a second language, or there could be all sorts of reasons where you have a great team member who can benefit from you, you know, kind of going async first. And even if everybody's in the same time zone, I just find this to be very empowering, so you can get the best ideas from different people on the team.
Yes, absolutely. And I think part of that is because everyone does have different learning styles. I'm the type of person that needs everything. I need to see it. I need to hear it. I need to experience it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's other people like that. But I do think that helps everybody be on the same page in that process. So you aren't missing, no one's missing the boat, basically, of understanding what is going on. And also when you're growing your team, but just making sure everybody's there and able to participate, because I know in some meetings, people will talk over people. I've seen it like in different types of aspects, and they might not get it right away. And they're like, oh, wait, I had something to say, but I lost it, or now it's not the right time to say it. So I think this just really helps that communication bridge. And I think it's going to help so many people listening that are growing their businesses or just having that team around them, so everybody benefits and it can grow more beautifully.
Yeah.
And just with all your experiences, the ups, downs, everything in between, I'm really curious, how do you really utilize a Stoic philosophy in managing business ownership and investments?
Yeah, so Stoicism, for folks who aren't familiar with the concept, is two simple concepts. It's very, you know, it can go deep if you really embrace it. Anyone who wants to talk to me offline is happy to reach out. But the two main concepts is we're not in control of what happens to us, but we are in control of how we react, right? And that's like a really important, I think, concept for us to embrace, especially in business, because you're trying to figure out, all right, my competitors are doing this, my customer do this. Like, no, all you have to worry about is how you're going to react. You don't have to worry about what other folks are doing. And it's I find calming in a certain way. Another big part of the concept is, you know, none of this kind of really matters. Like don't, you know, think you're so important and everything is like, you know, this big weight on your shoulders. I like to look at it as a game, but at the core, it's like, focus on what you can control. And through that lens, you're not worried about, oh, this news just came out about this competitor. Did you see this new press release? Oh my goodness, how are we gonna survive if they're building the same thing? And all of that energy, all of that time, all of that, you know, that's your capacity. You're now giving it away instead of focusing on yourself. And so you want to start inward and really focus on what you can control. And so then how do you activate that through the lens of business? You know, I call my company Kager Investments. That stands for compound annual growth rate. And so for the finance nerds, they'll know what that means, but that's how you measure, you know, how something is growing year over year. You'll hear like, this industry is growing at a 17% CAGR or CAGR, right? You'll hear those terms. But the reason I love that term is like, one day I was like, this isn't just about finance. This is about compounding. And the magic of what we do is about focusing on what we control. That's the Stoic principle, and doing it consistently. And when you do that, you compound. And that framework, we can compound our relationships with ourselves, our customers, our employees, our vendors, our investors. We can compound, you know, our skill set, our processes. You know, the reason I keep talking about keeping things simple is because if you just keep improving those simple things, you might look back months later and say, wow, what we built is quite complex. But if you start with the complexity, it never works. And so the goal is to always think about, you know, that saying, you should try to get 1% better every day. And the you know, improvement there is exponential. It's not a linear line. It is an exponential line. And so the reason I love bringing Stoicism as a concept into how we work is it's this great reminder on how to focus. And I pair that with a personal constitution. I think we all should have a North Star or a personal constitution. Mine is 6 words, 3 sentences, know thyself, make things, and stay free. And I'm not out here promoting that everybody should have my list, but I think everyone should have their own 4 to 8 word constitution / North Star. So as opportunities show up, as you face self-doubt, as you get distracted, you have, you know, a few set of words to keep yourself honest, keep yourself accountable, and keep yourself on track to your destination.
Yes. Yes to all of it. And, you know, I think it really aligns with everything we have been talking about when it comes to the compounding, because like the first example you gave with the marketing research, $1 focused on, okay, $2, $20, continuing to add that factor. And the 1%, I believe that too, if you're just getting 1% better versus trying to get to 100% better, it's not always going to work out for you. And it's focusing on each small step as a milestone, and you learn as you go. I always say you fail forward. I'll reframe that because I didn't always say that. I was like, damn it, I failed again. I made a mistake. But I think part of that is understanding that failure is a beautiful thing, because we all make mistakes. That's part of our growth. It's part of our journey. And understanding it's never going to be perfect, but knowing that we can continue to get 1% better or continue to take those steps. And we might take a step and it takes us on a different path, but that's the path we're supposed to go on, because this path isn't we're supposed to go anymore. And that's okay. There's pivots in the journey. And I'm really curious, with entrepreneurs listening, a lot of budding entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs, what would you say are some of the things to avoid when starting a business? I know we kind of touched on the things that you should do, but what are some things that you should avoid when you are starting?
Well, for this one, I'll give a very short answer. It's moving slow. And you just talked about failures, embracing failures. What you should, you know, to be a little more actionable, so I'll pile on and co-sign your point there. You should try to increase the speed of your failures. You're not trying to increase your failure rate. You're just trying to increase how often you have failures. And there's a saying, double your failures, double your success rate. And I think it's the number one thing that I see people struggle with once they have the right pieces in place. Yes, you need the right market. You need the right activities to go and sell. You need to, as they say, make a good sandwich. You can do all these things. And like, if whatever your product or service is, if no one wants it, you know, your business still isn't going to work. So you need all those things. But let's assume you have all those things. You can still fail. If you don't have the right self-awareness to kind of stick to your repeatable processes and all these types of things, but more importantly, if you don't move fast enough. And so what I see time and time again is people, maybe they came from a different, you know, a large company or nonprofit, or they worked in government, and they're moving much faster than they used to work there. And they don't realize that's still way too slow, way too slow. And so I pull from a really simple, you know, you can hear me talking frameworks. I think big companies tend to move in months and years. Well-funded startups or folks who are kind of growing, doing well, they tend to move in weeks. And if you are just getting started, your competitive advantage is moving fast and you need to move in hours. And if you find yourself thinking like, all right, next Wednesday, I'm going to, no. Go figure out how to break that problem down to a smaller piece and get it out there. Don't feel like, my logo doesn't look quite right. Oh, this webpage, like I want to fix this before I push it out. Oh, I got to buy a better camera before I start doing my social media videos. Like, these are all excuses that say, maybe what I'm building isn't that good. So I just want to put better clothes on it. I want to wear some better sneakers, a nicer dress, you know, like fix my hair. Like, I want to do something to signal that this is, you know, to kind of hide the fact that maybe I'm insecure on whether my product is actually good. And that exposure point is like the super vulnerable part of being an entrepreneur, where maybe what you're creating isn't that valuable. And that's what you want to get to. That's the moment where you're like, okay, now I know what the job is. And you don't get that if you don't move fast. You need to be super fast. And I don't want anybody to feel like you need to be stressed out or frantic, or like, that's not what moving fast is. Moving fast means you have a number of tasks and you are breaking them down to small enough pieces that you can complete. And you are sharing them in public. You're not doing a bunch of work like to yourself and you're like, you don't tell anybody. You're to whatever extent you're comfortable building in public and letting the world see how you're evolving, and you're doing that quickly. That's the magic. And so the number one thing I think will kill the business, if you got all the other pieces right, is you're just moving too slow. And I have to catch myself even now. You know, we have an investment on a really interesting product that's helping college athletes monetize their name, image, and likeness now that there's a rule to go and do this. And so that business is, you know, it's off to the races, but, you know, it's a very kind of status-driven industry, right? Because you're dealing with all these big brands, you're dealing with a lot of, you know, high-profile personalities, and there's, you know, the tension, the inclination is like, oh, well, let's finish this feature and make it a little better before we do a press release, before we, like, and I have to remind all of us, you know, who are working on that, it's like, no, we got to go, like, put it out there today, tomorrow, this week. And so I love this idea of release or update something to your customer base every week. And if you don't feel like you're on that pace, I'm not talking about your marketing. I'm talking about the product itself or your service itself. You know, if you're like, well, I have a coaching business or I have a consulting company, like, it doesn't matter. Figure out how you can get that better every week and then have a vehicle to communicate. So if anyone is they're moving fast, you probably need to find some multiplier against that. And that's your actual speed. You're probably coasting. And it's not a knock. It's just your competition and what it takes to really win in this space requires you to really increase your failure rate. And the thing you're in control of, back to the Stoic principles, is how fast you run those exercises.
You know, I think what you said too, it's about the fact that you have to go fast and it's not stressing yourself out, but constantly testing. So I just watched a episode with Stephen Bartlett. I love his episodes. He's a Diary of a CEO. Yep. And the person behind the scenes, Grace Andrews, I believe her name is.
I have that video queued up. I have to watch it.
Oh my gosh, you have to watch it.
Yeah.
But she really talks, I won't give up too much, but she does talk about constantly testing things. Every episode, they're testing so many different elements to make the video great and everything. Of course, he has a lot of full-time people. I'm not there yet, but I do know constantly changing things and figuring out what works, but not staying stagnant. And that's what I'm hearing from you as well. It's like,
yes,
continue to move forward. And I struggled with that in the beginning because I was like, well, I'm going from therapy to coaching to now like I'm in solar. So it's like completely different. But I think it's when you're allowing yourself to put yourself out there, no matter how bad it looks or anything along those lines, you can only get better from there. You can learn
right
from
that. And it's not your permanent record. It's just, this is the first episode. We'll see you soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
and you said something, I want to give a quick pro tip. I know we're oscillating between kind of strategy, mindset, and then hopefully some practical things, but a very practical thing, I find folks start to sometimes get stressed out when we talk about all, they're like, oh, I got to do all this experimenting. I got to go talk to these customers. I got like, it's like, oh my goodness. Here's a quick tool. Take your available hours in a month, in a week. I like a month because sometimes certain activities aren't weekly, but usually monthly you can capture most things and say, here's the total amount of hours I'm willing to spend getting my business successful. And I don't care what your number is, 10 hours, 700 hours. I think there's 761 hours or something like that in a month. Whatever your number is, go figure out your number. And then start allocating where you're going to do all these activities. Oh, I have to go get customer signal, or I have to go improve my product. I have to actually deliver my product or service. I have to go support. I have to go maybe do some vendor related things, check my banking, you know, talk to my bookkeeper. Lay all of this out. And then this is the unlock is to go take that. And when you have a mentoring call or a coaching call with your support group, however you say you want someone who kind of understands your space, you say, where do you see some impractical thinking on how I've allocated my time? And it's a great artifact for folks to now start driving conversation. And you know, sometimes when you're having a mentorship conversation, it's like, this is what's on fire. So you're talking about that problem. But I really love this as a tool to say, you know, especially for folks who are just getting started, they may have, you know, the idea that, oh, I'm going to spend 4 hours a week on this, and they really need to be spending 20. And then the thing they're spending 20 on, they need to be spending 1 hour. And so sometimes we have the right list of things, but we have the wrong time allocation. So that's a small little kind of pro tip that folks can use to start to assess, do I have my time allocated to the right places?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a hard one I had to learn too. But I so appreciate all these tips, all your insight. I'm really curious, where do you see your future goals and aspirations for the next year or so with everything that you're doing with investments and helping so many business owners?
Yeah, the thing I get excited about and what I love, what I do today versus maybe what I did 3 or 4 years ago, the work is not that much different, but I like to say you need to love your customer. And I'm helping, you know, solopreneurs, very small business owners. Many times the folks that I'm helping are companies with 20 or less employees, and I get really energized about that. And so my goal is to help as many folks in that space as possible. And so success for me, you know, is not, I need to make extra dollars. You know, I was very fortunate, you know, I landed in an industry that paid very well. You know, I hit financial independence at 35. I could have done it in my 20s, but you know, I didn't know a lot. I was making so many mistakes. But once you hit that inflection point and you're like, all right, I don't need money to live. You're like, how do I want to spend my time? And this sounds crazy, but I get energized when other people are energized about their journey. And so I don't really care what the person's business is, but you know, I'm on this mission and belief that there is financial independence through business ownership. And when I see someone who is in an earlier stage in their journey, I get excited if they're like, I have the conviction, the motivation, the drive. I want to do this the right way. I want it to work. Like, I just try to figure out what can I create leverage to help as many of those types of people. And so over the next year, I just want to do more of that.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to see all the business owners you help, but I've been so enjoying this conversation, LaShawn. I would love to know, where can people find you, use your services? We'll link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Yeah. So Dr. C, great to hang out. If folks want to reach out on any deals or learn more about, you know, kind of the investing side of what I do. And again, just to keep it very simple, I write checks to entrepreneurs who are selling small businesses or to folks who have small business ideas. And so that's, you know, the conversation I'm usually looking to have. You can hit our group inbox at grow, G-R-O-W at Kager.com. That's C-A-G-R.com. And then if you just want to talk about things, you know, today we talked about a bunch of business things. This is not, you know, oh, I just say this, like, I'm very serious about this. If you reach out on LinkedIn, I'm at L-A-S-E-A-N-S-M-I-T-H. So it's just my name, LaShawn Smith. You want to just talk, I will book a free 15 to 25 minute conversation. And the reason I do this, you know, for some folks, they're like, I have an idea, maybe I could bounce, you know, these ideas off you. I've met so many interesting people doing this. And hopefully I can, you know, kind of give them an extra, you know, set of ideas to consider as they're on their journey. But what I get out of it is the same thing we've been talking about. I'm hearing the problems. I'm hearing the pain points. And I turn these into interviews for me to figure out where should I invest next. And so, you know, the reason I don't charge for coaching is I like get all this goodness when I hear folks saying, here's what I want to go get done. And maybe here's the blocker. And then I'm thinking, is there a business I can invest in if I hear that 20, 30, 40 times. So folks can reach out on LinkedIn if you like to have a follow-up conversation. I spend almost half of my week in those types of discussions. And so reach out, would love to follow up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your energy, your generosity of everything that you've shared today, but also what you are doing to help so many business owners. I love that you get so energized by the ideas, because I mean, that's selfishly why I love this, doing this, is because I get to meet so many interesting and phenomenal people like yourself. So thank you again for coming on and just sharing all your insights and energy with us today.
Great to hang out.
Thank you. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below what was the biggest takeaway from today, and we'll see you on the next episode.